Never Quit Radio.
You ever think about quitting?
It's the combat of life hammering the snot out of you.
Well, stand by, dig in deep, and get ready to get fired up with us.
Welcome to the Team Never Quit Podcast, the number one podcast that inspires you to fight on. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, here with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Luttrell.
Our mission is to help you embrace the suck of life, to teach you the values of working your ass off, and to interview the most hard-charging people on planet Earth.
We know life is hard. It's time for you to suck it up, Buttercup, and let us teach you to persevere in every environment imaginable by sharing real-world lessons learned by those who never quit. That's right. It's time, Marcus, for us to help them defeat the negative insurgency in their lives.
You fire me up. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's roll.
Let's roll.
This is ground control to Major Tom. I'm floating in the air.
What are you laughing at, dude? I was just getting my groove on, man.
Should have been more of an Armageddon.
Have been more of using the right words.
What do you mean, right words to what?
The right lyrics.
Those are the right lyrics.
They're not.
This is ground control to Major.
Jet plane.
Leaving on a jet plane. And I don't want to play taxes ever again. Check.
Armageddon was a great movie.
Oh, dude. Dude, who is your favorite?
I'm a big Bruce Willis fan.
Yeah.
But yeah. Papa Bear, when he came. When he
oh, the motorcycle.
I love him, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Oh. His character. And he has he's wearing the. The gold, the gold Speedo?
The best, and remember when you cut your hand off with a spear?
Yeah.
I told you, I was like, the toughest thing I ever say is, uh-oh. You know where I got that?
From him?
Owen Wilson, when their shuttle's crashing into the thing, that's when he goes, uh-oh!
No kidding.
That's stuck in my head, man. That is the toughest thing I ever say when something goes bad. Like,
uh-oh. I love Steve Buscemi, man. That's my guy.
That whole thing was good, man.
Oh, man. One of the things that I love about that whole space concept is, you know, if you're going to make the decision, right? And granted, not only do you have to go figure out what's the thing they had to crunch into one movie with about the numbers and all that.
The gimbals?
Yeah, right? Oh. If you got to go crunch gimbals and, you know, what's the...
I think that every time I watch Apollo 13 and everything's going wrong, they're trying to crunch some gimbals before they run out of O2, I'd have just been like, Houston, we're done up here.
Yeah, it would be like, come again? Can you repeat your last...
Paying attention with them gimbal class when we had that. Think about it.
Did you see the movie with Matt Damon? What, Mission to Mars or Mars or what do they call that?
Martian.
The Martian, right? I read the book, and the book is 1,000 times crazier. Like, every second he's dying. Now, I think about that just like you, bro. I'm like, nah, forget it. Like, but thank God I'm not aspiring to do that, right? Because if you begin to aspire to dream of being an astronaut, part of your sequence, the psychology of your quest has to be the ever-present reality that at any second you're going to die.
You could drift into oblivion, never to return.
I mean, you know how we're hanging around our boys, and I'm like, man, we were hanging it out there.
Yeah.
Like, if Cassidy says that.
Literally.
It's way out there, right? Well, it kind of takes it to a different level.
Yeah. What was that? Was it Gravity, the one with
Sandra?
Sandra Bullock? Like, they start drifting off, just inches away, but drifting.
Yeah, you're gone, and you're never coming back. Because you can't push off shit in space, can you?
I mean, there's one of those so close, but yet so far.
Yeah. So far away. What's another great space movie? 2001 Odyssey?
Interstellar.
Interstellar's good? What's the one with Chris Pratt and what's her
Guardians
name?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, not
that Guardians so great.
It
so
is
so great.
Remember when
so
we watched? Remember when so we watched great. It like every night for the whole week out here?
It did. It literally played for an entire week.
It never long. Came off.
No. It was stuck.
Is that good?
No, batteries are dead in remote or something.
We want you on the show, man. Anytime. Come
Prometheus?
On. I don't know about that one. Aliens for
pretty
me.
Good, right?
That was good.
Oh, yeah.
Game well, we're over, talking about, man. Like,
that was part Predator. Of the Predator. Alien sequence.
What else?
Prometheus was yeah. an alien.
At the beginning, right?
2001 Space Odyssey. I'm a big Stanley Kubrick fan. Right?
That was way back.
I'm not too familiar with that one, actually.
That's what I'd say.
He's like, who's Stanley Kubrick?
I just has, isn't that, that's the one with the dawn of man, the boom, boom,
the great
boom,
soundtrack.
Yeah,
boom,
the boom, best boom, soundtrack, boom. Best space soundtrack ever.
It's classic right there.
Totally. Star Wars.
Flash Gordon.
Dude. Flash!
So good. Quarterback from the New York Jets is going to save the world.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
Baseball is really good, yeah.
Mars Attacks. Ack, 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 ack.
Yeah,
that's a great one.
Dude.
Great cameo alien movie.
Oh, brother. Welcome to the Team Never Quit podcast. I'm your host, David Rutt Rutherford, with Mr. Never Quit himself, Marcus Luttrell, and the infamous, the Wizard. We need to come up with some sound effects for you, dude.
You can use the Dawn of Time. Boom, boom,
yeah,
boom,
let's
boom,
do it.
Boom, boom,
ready?
Boom,
you have boom. That? Pull that sucker up right now. Let's try it.
Let's give that a run.
You ready? Here. Wizard. Dude, that's awesome, man. That's got to be in there every time from here on out when I do the intro on the show.
Yeah.
Done? Deal? Mark, that's good? All right, good. All right, if this is your first time to our show, then you obviously are going, what the hell is this show about? Well, let me tell you, you are in store for one of the greatest guests we've had. And I know I say that about every guest, but this guy is truly next level. We've got astronaut, Navy SEAL, MIT graduate, Captain Chris Cassidy on the show, right? That's phenomenal. We're going to have a killer reader story.
Just stop and let that sink in for a second. Astronaut, Navy SEAL.
MIT grad.
MIT grad.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Oh, Naval Academy grad, too. That's something serious. I can't. Dude,
oh,
this
yeah,
guy's
a degree
amazing.
In mathematics.
But yeah, Matt, not right. like...
It wasn't basketball.
Engineering, right? Some kind of engineering.
Whatever it is.
It was
definitely
big.
Makes you think there's a difference in the species.
Some of us, for right? sure.
What else?
I know. All right. If you are coming back for more, you're a repeat offender. We love you. Thank you so much. We are so stoked you're back. You know what our show's all about. You understand the power and the impact of what it means to learn from our guests to understand how to face the adversity in your life, how to overcome your obstacles, how to reach new heights in your life, and learn the never quit mindset. Now, if you want to know more about us, go ahead and visit our website at tnqpodcast.com, where we have some new
swag.
Swag. New
swag.
New. You're not even going to join in on
you're
that.
Good. That's good.
Come on, man.
I'm not got the singing thing. I can't even carry a tune in a bucket with a lid, dude. It's ridiculous. I don't even sing in the shower. All right, so.
Dude. All right. So we got new swag. We got t-shirts, some other stuff, other merchandise. Okay. If you want to follow us on social media, the Wizards is actually on social media. We got it now. Just go to Instagram and search The Wizard TNQ, or you can follow our new TNQ podcast page at TNQ Podcast. I'm at Team Frog Logic, and Marcus is at Marcus Luttrell. Hey, what's up, boss lady? How you doing?
I'll stop. Pay the respects to the lady of the house. Yeah.
Oh, that's how I'm going to bring him on. All right.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring him on that way. All right.
You should.
All right. So now what do we got going on? I think it's time you got to read
actually
a little.
Pretty cool what she just said. She's like, I'm going to go pick the kids up from jujitsu.
You can say that again. Is that cool? Is that cool? Your son's first gi?
It is, man. It was something. I was holding it up and trying to staring at us so proud. It's just like those little moments.
That's
right?
A big deal, dude.
It is, man.
That's his first step towards becoming an astronaut.
Right? Martian.
Martian. Star-Lord. Yeah.
Star-Lord. That's Axe's first step.
He could be Star-Lord.
He could be.
He's good-looking, blue eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened, bro?
Thank God. I know, right? Our kids don't look at anything like me. No, thank the good Lord.
Thank God the girls. Thank God the girls do not look like my crusty old salty ass. All right. So, Wizard, give us a little rundown on this liftoff.
All right, Captain Chris Cassidy, as we said, NASA astronaut and Navy SEAL, amongst other things. He started out in, he was in Buds Class 192 and then did 10 years in the teams, reaching rank of captain. During that time, he did 4 6-month deployments, a couple in Afghanistan, a couple in the Mediterranean.
Oh, my God, it's fast.
That's super fast. Awesome. To reach captain that fast, that's insane.
I mean, it's almost 7 years just to get lieutenant, I thought.
No, yeah. Five.
Yeah, the man knows how to move. I mean,
7 years
prior
lieutenant.
To this, he graduated from the Naval Academy with a mathematics degree. During his time in the teams is when he earned that, we mentioned before, that ocean engineering degree from MIT while he was in the teams.
Mississippi Institute of Technology, right there on the coast.
Muskogee. Well,
a little further
Muskogee
than Muskogee
Institute of
Institute of Technology. It's in my barn.
We did death soundings in the pond. There he got his reeds.
All right.
So during his time in the teams, deployed to Afghanistan, involved in doing some non-compliant shipboarding stuff in the Persian Gulf, as well as something near and dear to Marcus's art here. He was a platoon commander at SDV Team 2.
Bloop, 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 bloop,
about 200 hours on bag there in the SDV. What's that like, Marcus? I wouldn't know.
Nor do I ever want
what
to know.
Definitely the frogman portion of our job.
That's true. You earned that, no doubt. Let's see. He also served as an XO at Special Boat Team 20, as well as some other things. He gets out of the teams. 2004, he's selected as an astronaut candidate by NASA. 2 years later, he completes his training.
You think that's like going to astronaut camp over the summer?
I went to space camp, too.
Space camp. That's it. You think that's what
it is?
I had
a movie about that in the 80s. It was
good.
Yeah,
those kids went up in space.
What? Did you really go to space camp?
They got blasted into those kids. Got blasted into space.
Did you really go to space camp?
No, I wouldn't. No.
Oh, that is a thing, right?
They wouldn't let me in space camp.
No, he wouldn't go to space camp. You had to... Like, yeah, requirements.
Yeah, that was like, yeah. Like,
what are the requirements, Dave?
You had not to get in trouble for more than like 10 minutes. Right? You had to be able to sit still for 10 minutes.
Class period.
Yeah, 30 minutes sitting still. Man, yeah, I knew I wouldn't have passed that one. That's why I never went either, up at Canaveral.
I didn't go to space camp. I went to that scared straight.
Scared straight camp.
Nah, bro, I didn't go to space camp.
Latrell 0400.
You made it. All right. Keep
so
going.
He completes his astronaut candidate training, which on completion of this, it qualifies him to do various technical assignments, and he was assigned to his first mission. He was a mission specialist on STS-127. That's a space shuttle mission. He also was involved in Expedition 35 and 36, where he did several spacewalks. I mean, I guess these are the mile markers or challenges or things
that
astronauts achieve. How many spacewalks, you know, these tasks they have to go up there and do.
Because they're out there for a little bit, aren't they? It's not like they just go out and say, take a selfie and go back in. They're doing stuff.
It has to be, right, because of how much they have to procedures just to get out there.
Yeah, I imagine they plan every single detail of the entire procedure they do once they leave.
Yeah, plan your dive, your plan.
So 2015, he then gets named as chief of the astronaut office at NASA. He's involved in selecting new personnel. A couple other tiny small details. He was the 500th person in space. And he was the second SEAL to fly in space, falling behind William Shepard, or Bill Shepard, who was a veteran of 4 previous missions, 181 days outside of our atmosphere.
That's a lot. That's awesome. 181 days in the stand was bad.
Base deployment.
Yeah, right? Holy cow. Well, what do you say, gents? This guy is going to be phenomenal. He's one of us. He's one of our own. He's part of the brotherhood. What do you say, gents? Should we get him on?
Absolutely.
Captain Christopher Cassidy, astronaut arriving.
Try that again.
Man, I can't do it.
That was horrible.
Oh, it's horrible. I just figured you could dub it in. Can you just...
No, don't. Leave it there.
Fuck you. All right. Now, Marcus, here it is. We've got another one of the Brotherhood again. And this one is in a whole nother atmosphere, brother. Literally and figuratively, man. I love when we bring Andy Stumpf on because his resume is insane. I love when we bring on Commander Zinke. His resume is insane. But nobody... So far, nobody has reached the limits as this guest has, bro. Are you fired up?
This is my number one. It's my all-time favorite one already.
How could it not be?
You guys say that to all your guests. I'm sure you do.
The path that he's walked, we're familiar with, and then the one that no one else got. I mean, there's only a handful of people on the earth that have that. And, man, that's just a... That's the coolest thing to me, man.
It when you think about the magnitude of not only just making it in the teams, but then going to MIT, but then also to become one of the elite of the elite of the elite, man, to be in that even smaller brother and sisterhood, man, for me, that's the epitome of that never quit mindset.
We need to find out. They need to have. They better have their own secret society, right? I mean, anybody need to have one.
I guarantee. Well, let's get them on and let's ask them about everything under the sun and in between. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, please welcome to the show, U.S. Navy SEAL astronaut Captain Chris Cassidy, sir. Thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Oh, absolutely. That's the best introduction I've ever had. I should tape that and play it whenever I go up to go places. That's outstanding. I'm really, really psyched to be here with you guys. Super cool and to be part of the program.
Awesome, awesome.
Well, you thought you'd been launching to space before, but how about that?
I'm stoked about this. Basically, like sitting in the platoon space, getting to hear him tell a story. I've been waiting for this for so damn long.
Dude, once you first said, because like, Chris, it was so funny because Mel and Marcus were, you know, Marcus went through his tour and he came back and we had a recording session not long after that. He's like, he was like going on and on and on. He says, well, you know, I was like, man, we got to get, you know, Chris Cassidy on. He's like, oh, okay, yeah. I think we'll make that happen. And then Mel texted
you.
Oh, thank you. It's just I think we're all really fired up. But before we get into the meat and potatoes of this thing, before we gotta launch out this show by doing something we do with everybody, and I know you're familiar with a Mad Minute. I can't imagine what the Mad Minute questions would be like up in space if someone's going wrong, right? How much?
I'm crushing those gimbal numbers in Apollo 13. Every time I see that, I'm like, that's where we'd all been dead.
The part where we die.
Right, you know when you crunch gimbal numbers? We're all dead. Yeah. Just look out the window, check out the moon one last time.
Yes.
That's what blows me away about MIT. I mean, you know, not Mississippi Institute of Technology. It's the real one.
And, God, I love it. All right. So, sir, what we do is we're going to warm your prefrontal cortex. Just saying that to him is kind of silly as well.
Right?
Like, his is always firing, right? I mean, it's always on point, man. All right. So, we're going to warm you up with what we call the Mad Minute. Now, these are going to be the hardest questions you've ever... Forget all the stuff you've ever had to deal with, gimbal numbers and all at NASA. These will be the most difficult questions you've ever experienced in your life, sir. Are you prepared?
Let's go. Fire away.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
All right, brother. Where's the darkest place you've ever been?
Ooh, good
Under
one.
Under a ship in Norfolk Harbor.
needs to say that.
You do. Absolutely.
Has to be.
I don't know a team guy that doesn't say that.
His background in the team, especially when he was at, I know he had been under there. And I was like, gotta be.
It's. I got to tell you, it's really dark on the outside of the space station on the dark side of the Earth. But there's lights around you, and you can generally kind of see. There's nothing that matches the blackness of underneath an aircraft carrier, underneath some other big ship in the middle of Norfolk muddy harbor.
Man. That's brutal. All right, Wizard, fire away.
All right. If aliens exist, do they most closely resemble A, Alien from the Aliens movie series, B, Avatar, or C, Mars Attacks?
Ooh, I'm going to go Avatar.
Oh, nice. Nice. Right. I like that. That's what I'm hoping for. Because the
That's not fun.
I don't want the yak. That'd be so depressing, right?
They're funny, but quite
malicious. We're here to help.
Yeah, right?
We're here to help.
Yeah. All right. If you have the opportunity to go to Mars, what role do you want to play in that trip?
I want to be the guy that plays cards on the travel there that takes you 6 months, and the first one out the door when the hatch opens in your land.
He just team guide that, didn't he? I want to be the door gunner.
Door gunner.
Oh, man. Just think, he's the only one of the team guys that can actually use Door Gunner on the space station.
There's a chance he could actually get to go. So that's a feasible thing.
I asked him.
That visual in my head. Right? I got that whole screen blacked out. Spaceman call sign.
No, do the call sign one, dude. All right, go.
All right, brother. Are you superstitious?
No.
All right. Really, man? I am.
I know you are.
Weird ones, like all
are
of.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Like what? Do you do certain routines or every time the same thing? Yeah,
most people call that OCD, but I call it being superstitious. Right? No, I got a couple of numbers if I see those, and then never walk under the ladder. They're black. The day I was having to go get cut, Melanie was like, "You're done taking bullets out of the gun." The vasectomy thing. I was driving to the hospital, a black cat walked right in front of me. Thank God that happened, dude. I threw it in reverse real fast and started hauling ass. Man's like, "What's wrong? What's going on?" I was like, "Black cat just came across the highway."
Black cat crossed the highway.
Yeah, well, I was going
now
to get
going
cut.
The wrong direction down
no,
the way.
Man, not letting God. That happen. Everything had to be perfect on that day.
Oh, all right, Wizard, fire away.
All right, give us one of the best things and the worst things about astronaut training. I don't think many people know too much about that, and I want to hear your personal opinion.
Good question. So the best thing about astronaut training is traveling to the other international space agency centers and training with their people and their astronauts, like in Russia and Japan and Germany and Canada. That's just super, super cool. Jumping in their swimming tanks, jumping in their virtual reality simulators, just freaking awesome. Mm. The worst thing about training for space flight is giving up complete control of your life to schedulers. You have to ask permission to take a day off. They've got this big magic Ouija board of all these training clocks you got to accomplish. Kind of like being in a platoon, every training block is blocked out, except instead of just going to ask your chief or your LPO or the OIC for a day off, it's a bigger deal because if you can't go in the simulator today and you need to reschedule for another day, that affects like four other people's training schedules in the facility and blah, blah, blah. So you really kind of give up control of your life for a two year period, but it's totally freaking worth it because guess what? The prize is you're going to space.
Right?
It's that's so cool. Do that again.
You're going to war.
Right?
You're going to space. You're going to war. I'm going to space. Every
you got
time.
Dropped into that platoon, that space platoon. Yeah. Oh, that's heavy, dude.
Space platoon.
Yeah. I love it, dude. All right.
You're in the SEAL team, son. Where'd you deploy? Space. Whatever, man. No platoon in space.
Get out of here.
Check it out.
Oh, man. That's awesome. All right. If they in the future develop the space-time traveler, right? What choice would you make? Would you make to go forward or backwards? And then if you could choose one or the other, when would you go and what time?
Oh man, that is an insane question because you'd love to go backwards and redo some stuff, especially when you're 18 years old in high school, right? If you knew now what you knew then, you could conquer the world. But I think I'd choose going forward. And this might sound corny, but I would love to see how my children turn out as adults. They're like young adults right now in college and high school. And you never know as a parent if you're doing the right thing. You're just doing the best that you know. There's no instruction manual. So it'd be super cool to see my kids when they're older in life. And if I could take any lessons learned, like, oh, I screwed that decision up. I should have audibled at the line of scrimmage.
What, you mean spraying my daughters down with the hose was not a good idea?
And being team guys, we sweat it the whole time, right? It's always, like, oh, God's coming and always coming.
All right, Marcus, yeah. Fire away, bud.
Hey, how similar is the pool to space?
Oh, man, Marcus, it is spot on, except for two things. There's two differences. One is in the pool, if you turn upside down, all of your weight is still resting on your collarbone and the blood still goes to your head because there's gravity still affecting the building and the pool. Mm-hmm. So it's not very comfortable to go upside down in the pool. However, in space, you can flip around any way you want. You can't tell the difference. It's all good. And the other big one is, I kind of mentioned it, we're going around the world every 90 minutes. So you have 45 minutes in the daylight and 45 minutes in the pitch dark. Not quite as dark as Norfolk Harbor, but still pitch dark. And in the building, in the training facility in Houston at the pool that you saw, we just generally leave the lights on all the time. It's just, we in the astronaut office think we should turn the lights out. The building people don't want to make it pitch dark for the workers. So anyway, bottom line is it's never pitch dark in the pool. So that's a pretty big shock when you're on your very first spacewalk, when you open the door and it's nighttime and you're like, holy cow.
That's big.
Yeah. So, but you can't kick out though in space, can you?
No. You can't. There's nothing to kick. There's no resistance there. You can't kick out.
That's great. No matter how much energy, the human body can generate, you can't even push yourself an inch, right? But
right. If your fingertips were this far away from a handrail, you're dead.
And you told me that. I blew my mind. It's kind of right there like this. If you sneeze and let go for a second, someone has to come get you.
Oh, my gosh. That's tight right there.
We do, just for that very reason, we have kind of like when you rock climb, you climb and you need to take a break. You clip in with a little fair lead, you know, 2-foot-long lead, mm-hmm. so you can shake it out and rest a little bit and take the load off. We have same kind of things. We have these little short leads where you're always making sure you're clipped in because for that very reason, if you were 6 inches away, you might as well be 200 miles away because you're not getting back.
Wow. Did you gorilla grip the crap out of that bar when you...
Your first one?
God.
Wait, not for
nobody's business. Hey, calm down. Your heart rate's about to go through the roof.
And one of the experienced astronauts on my first mission, he sent me a note right before I went out on a spacewalk, and all it said was, loosen your grip. And this is before I even went out. And so I remember on that first, like the first 2 minutes of my first time thinking about his email, loosen your grip. And I thought about my hand like, oh, yeah, I am about to rip this hand right out of the metal.
I love it. All right, Marcus, last question. We got to hear from him. Yeah.
All right. Favorite superhero.
Aquaman.
Whoa, I did not expect that one, but I love, why Aquaman?
I loved watching him at that cartoon as a kid, and maybe it was foreshadowing of my life underwater, particularly in STVs. I loved being an STVer, by the way.
So you're the only one, sir.
No, there's a couple of us weird guys out there. But let me tell you why. I did not love freezing my butt off for 8 hours, but what I liked was the problem solving of once you submerge, it's just you and your buddy figuring out problems. You didn't have other people to take care of your business for you. However screwed up you made it, it was because you made yourself screwed up. And however creative you got, it was because you got creative. So that's what I really liked, was you and your buddy just dealing with it.
Oh, you're in the middle of the ocean, and the depth gauge has asterisks across it because and we don't have voice. Contrary to popular belief, we couldn't talk to each other back and forth. We have our own language and grunts and moans and pinches and pulls. And you're right, man. There is nothing else, just you and him. That's why JJ and I are so close.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, sir, thank you so very much. That is the mad 12 minutes. Yeah. Your answers were all awesome. We appreciate it. But we're gonna pivot here a little bit, and we're going to get into, you know, the real mass of what makes this show what it is. And we have this incredible following, and a large percentage of the reason why people come here is because they're going through their own struggle, their own challenges in life. They're trying to figure out how to get started, how to face adversity and overcome obstacles, that problem solving you just talked about when all else seems like it's coming down. And so they come here to hear some of the greatest never quit stories that have ever been told. And so that way they can get their life back on track, even if it's for an inch or it's, you know, a million miles an hour. So, sir, without further ado, would you please share with our listeners your greatest never quit story or stories?
Yeah, this is a good topic. I really am fascinated by the topic. In fact, when I sign a picture to somebody in NASA, we have these little headshots of ourselves, and very often I put Never Quit on there because it captures so much of what all of us in our community embody. And think about, before this show, there's two things I wanted to share with you. One was a lesson I learned in Buds, and one was a lesson I learned later in life here at NASA. And I'll start with Wednesday, I think it was, of Hell Week. sitting on the beach about to eat an MRE. For, I think probably your listeners know what Hell Week is, but it starts on Sunday and generally ends on Friday. One big blur of activity, running around and doing all different things that we call evolutions. One of those particular times was Wednesday night, so kind of in the middle of the week, and it was right as the sun was setting, and we're eating an MRE on the beach, all sandy. And I'm starting to feel a little sorry for myself because I'm really cold. I'm eating this crappy ass MRE.
Covered in sand.
Covered in sand. And I remember I probably had this 1,000-yard stare in my eyes. And I don't remember thinking, I wasn't thinking about quitting or anything. I was just kind of had that icky feeling of, man, this just freaking sucks. It's only Wednesday, and I got to go till Friday. And I was starting to drift off mentally. And I remember my buddy in my boat crew, the fellow SDVer, also Don Spites, he hit me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, snap out of it." And that's all I needed, was a little knock from a guy that was going through it right there with me, stride for stride, and I was right back in the game. And so that, to me, was a lesson I learned in, you can't do hard stuff by yourself.
Amen.
You got to have a teammate or teammates or your family or a counselor, people like that that are in your corner to help you, that know you well and can pull you along. And I'm preaching the choir with you guys, but you just can't do hard stuff by yourself. That was my big lesson learned there. Then, and there's many experiences in between that Hell Week time and what I'm about to share with you, but this is a good thing that kind of circles back together. Mm-hmm. My last space mission, 2013, I'm outside about to do my sixth spacewalk. So,
wow.
And I'm going out the door with my buddy Luca Parmitano, an Italian astronaut who is only his second spacewalk, but we had done one a week earlier than this. And we go outside, and they're generally planned for 6.5-7 hours long, and about 45 minutes into it, he feels water on his head. And if you know anything about being outside a spacesuit, water inside your helmet is not what you want to have going on.
Where's this coming from?
What is leaking?
Want to keep only oxygen inside that thing. And so there we are. We're outside the space station, pretty far away from the safety of the airlock, and his helmet is filling with water. And
wow.
There's some period of time where we're talking to the ground, and we collectively decide, well, maybe it's time to be going in, and we're thinking, what are the sources of, how could you possibly have water inside the spacesuit? Well, it could be sweat. It could be urine. but it's hard to sweat enough that you see it and you're floating around. And urine, we have diapers on, so that's both of those are pretty unlikely. We have a camelback-like thing on our chest that holds a little bit of water, so it could possibly be leaking from the camelback. But then there's also cooling water in the backpack. And once he tasted it and realized it was ice cold water, none of those other first three things are ice cold. They're all body temperature. We knew then it was really bad. So he starts making his way back, and he gets to the airlock. And I remember hearing his voice change, and you could tell he was really not in a good spot with water now around his ears and his eyes and his nose. I remember thinking, and all this happens really, really fast, as you know, Marcus. You just kind of – you just do stuff in gut reaction from training and from preparation, good hard muscle memory skills. I knew that problems never get really awesome in super fast, but they sure can go to hell in a handbasket super fast.
Those are two different things.
I remember thinking to myself, how can I take actions that are going to not make this situation worse? And I was kind of dirt diving the last probably 20 yards to get to the airlock. I was dirt diving in my head what my hands needed to do, like where I needed to move the hooks and safety lines and how to close the hatch. Because the only thing that mattered at that time was closing the hatch to the airlock so that we could start moving air and getting repressurized. Because when you're in the vacuum of space, if you take his helmet off, he's dead.
Right.
The water in the helmet is inconsequential at that point. You just have to get pressure around you in order to take the helmet off so he could breathe. And I was telling another group this about a week ago. I don't even remember what my hands did.
Wow.
To this day, I can't remember the actions I took to unhook ourselves and bring the things inside that needed to be brought in and then flip around and close the hatch. I just remember cranking the handle on the hatch closed. There was this like 30-second period of my life where just instinct and training and muscle memory took over and got that hatch closed. And then I could deal with Luca and help him and get him situated. But he didn't matter up until getting the hatch closed. So that was part of that ties back to what I learned in Hell Week is if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't be here to be telling. I wouldn't be here to tell. He wouldn't be here to hear the story. I wouldn't probably be here to be telling it. Mm. It's the teamwork aspect of being outside, just like being in Hell Week that day where I needed Don Spites to wake me up. So that was a pretty crazy story. And we at NASA were out of commission for spacewalks for about a year and a half after that until we really understood what happened and got it fixed. And now we're back in business.
Well, what was it? Yeah.
Yeah, so in simple terms, like imagine you use a garden hose and you use it and then you leave it full of water and 6 months later you want to go take a drink out of it. That water is going to be all nasty, right? Well, the spacesuit is filled with water and we only use them periodically. And what we need to do after every single spacewalk is flush out the water and clean it with iodine and some solution. And we had thought over the years that we were cleaning it out effectively, but turns out we weren't. So, lack of a better word, sludge was building up. Icky water was building up inside the spacesuit components that caused the pump outlet to block, and water couldn't go out the pump direction that it needed to go, and it backed up to a way that we never thought it would ever be possible for that water to back up, and ultimately got into the oxygen system. And as oxygen was coming into his helmet, it was mixed partial water, partial oxygen. And that was the root of the problem.
Because it wouldn't happen in the pool.
Yeah, right.
It would only happen in the abyss of space, right?
Water's the only thing that can't be contained, man. It's going to find a way to get in there.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's going to find a way. Yeah.
Well, sir, I love how you equate, you know, when you talk about the never quit mindset, you always, people have this imagination that it's about those heavy moments, like being in space and your buddy's going to die. But in your mind, how does the never quit mindset play a role in day-to-day life, right? Where, because obviously you go to the academy, you're trying to just work through there. It's a difficult place. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. And then you got to go through SEAL training. Then you go to combat. Then you run into, you know, Mr. Shepard, Astronaut Shepard. And so it's this perpetual idea or mindset. Can you explain a little bit of that and how you manage that in your life?
Yeah, you know, I think it is even more basic than that, because to most people out there, they're never going to live through what Marcus did, or very unlikely going to strap onto a rocket and fly in space. But every one of us has days where they're just hard, or weeks that are hard, or months that are hard, whether you're going through a divorce or a tough boss, or your family and loved family member has cancer, or you do. Any one of those situations is super relatable to everybody here on Earth. And I remember when I was younger talking to my dad, he told me this, I think, initially, is that hard times end. And when do they end is you never know. It could be a moment from now, 1 minute from now, like if in Hell Week, where you just can't push the log anymore. In 1 minute, it's going to be over. Or it's going to be in a week from now, like starting Hell Week, or, you know, you're dealing with the sickness, all that stuff. It's unknown amount of end, but it's eventually going to end. And keeping that in mind for me has been helpful just in my normal life, going through personal struggles, personal hard times, trying to balance all the things in a given day. Like when you're a new astronaut, you're learning all these systems of the space station and the space shuttle and all these switches. And at the same time, you still got family at home and, you know, all the normal stresses that have with a family and kids and a wife or husband. And you put all that together and you get stressful days. So it's fully relatable to every person on the planet, this attitude that gets you through not only Hell Week or combat, but life.
I love that answer. When one of the things that we hear a lot of from our guests is the people that played major roles in their life, right? And you'd reference your father. Can you talk a little bit about Bill Shepard and the role he played in you making this? I mean, it's not just a small jump going from a platoon commander to an astronaut. But that's a massive leap. That's a massive change in direction in your life. What kind of influence did he play? And then how did he enable you to believe it was possible?
Yeah, so that's interesting, because I had just finished 4 years. I was finishing up 4 years at SDV Team 2 in Norfolk, my first two operational tours in the SEAL teams. And it was time for a shore duty assignment, and I was trying to figure out, what do I want to do? Where do I see myself? Do I envision myself staying in the military, in the Navy, or moving on? My wife was kind of worn out from basically me being gone for 4 years, and I knew that I needed some sort of just stable thing for a couple years, for just recharging my own batteries and to support her. And so graduate school was a very logical choice, and this was before thinking about NASA. I knew that it would help me in life, but it would also accomplish the goals I just mentioned. And it was right about that same time when I learned about Bill Shepard's path to being an astronaut, that he'd go to the Naval Academy. He had gone to graduate school at MIT. I hadn't been accepted to MIT yet. And then he applied to become an astronaut, and he did. And I was thinking about different graduate school options when I was talking it over with a friend, my wife, and I got the idea, why don't I just call him and see if he has time to talk to me and give me some advice? So I did. And I got him on the phone, and I had never met him before. And he told me that, yeah, if you want to be an astronaut, at that time, I didn't even think that it was possible for me, but he was a motivating person for me, independent of me trying to become one myself.
And he said, yeah, if you want to become an astronaut, then you probably need to go to graduate school in engineering. But even if it does, astronaut stuff doesn't work out for you, a graduate degree in engineering from any school is going to help you in life. And so that's when this seed really spawned for me. And about that same time, I went to graduate school at MIT, got in, got there. 2 years go by, and I'm PCS moving from Massachusetts to SEAL Team 3 in San Diego. Draw a line across the country, and you can kind of swing through Houston to make that drive. And I did, and called him a couple days before and said, sir, I'm going to be in Houston on whatever day, and you got time to meet. Just so happened, my luck, he was about 1 week away from leaving Houston to go to Russia for his own launch to the space station. Mm-hmm. And I took that as a sign, like, wow, this is pretty cool. Here I am. We met at this bar called Boondoggles, which is a favorite astronaut hangout in Houston. And there was a few other astronauts there that I got to meet. And I got to meet his Russian crewmate, Sergei Krikalev, who I didn't know at the time, but later found out he is the most experienced, at the time, was most experienced Russian cosmonaut ever.
Wow.
Hero of the Soviet Union, hero of Russia. And so that's when I really got the fire burning of, holy cow, this is pretty cool. Bill Shepard just said, yeah, put your application in and see what happens. And he didn't say anything magical. It was just his path, and then encouraging me to pursue a similar thing. And it all worked out.
That's awesome. Now, I know you, when you got back, you did do a couple deployments to Afghanistan. Did that change your perspective or alter, or was it more inspirational? I mean, share with our listeners a little bit how your perspective changed in the macro after going to war.
Yeah, so I went two six-seven-month deployments there, and one was immediately after September 11th, I don't know, October sometime, when we actually had boots on the ground in Kandahar. And then the subsequent 7 months after that. And then 3 years later in 2003 into 2004 is when I went my second time. And it was a stark contrast and difference between the wild, wild west of when I showed up there in 2001 and the more big army, big military, brief everybody just to drive out the gate to go to the training range kind of thing, where the first time I was there, it was, you talk to a village guy, he says so-and-so is going to be in the village over at midnight tonight, and next thing you know, you're rolling there. There was nobody to brief. Well, we did have a small joint staff there after a little bit, but it was just nuts. How my perspective changed, though, after these deployments is realizing how precious life is.
Amen.
And how every one of us is one engine malfunction, one rock going up into the air intake of a helicopter, one valve not working on an engine, or simply your brake line failing on your car on the drive home. We're one of those mistakes away from it all being gone. And how precious we are to be breathing, how precious it is to be walking around and be able to share with you in life what I'm doing, live about my life. So I really came away with those deployments of being thankful that I was alive, thankful for my brothers that weren't, that are the heroes of America, that gave their life to defend it. Marcus, your teammates on the reconnaissance there, ones like them, and all the others since. And I value life more.
Amen.
Wow. Let me, do you want to continue on that? Or I kind of want to change the subject here and ask about ultra achievers. All right. We have some people, our guests on the show, they have all gone through or achieved some exceptional things. But there are a few of them that just seem to fit into this category where they have not only marked one massive achievement, but those that have multiple, you know, then they kind of stand above that. And at least from your perspective, maybe give us some insight into what is it that enables a person to become an individual that seems to achieve at whatever they set their mind to. Can you distill out some insight into that for us?
All I can tell you is about myself, and I don't think that I sit around saying, what thing can I do next? It's more of...
Thank God, because you're going to, like, cure cancer or something, sir.
No, but it's more of just, as you're going through life, doors and opportunities open up and acting on them. It's hard sometimes to act on an opportunity because it requires change. It requires inertia, and it's easy to be... just continue your steady state, to continue doing what you're doing, stay in the same jobs, or if, like in life, maybe it's an unhealthy relationship. It's easy just to stay. It takes energy and work and sometimes emotional investment to do a change, to leave your current job and step off to something else. I remember thinking after I went to my first astronaut interview, there were 20 people in my week, and there were five other weeks of 20, and this was the final down to the final 120 making it. And I came home and said, I'm screwed. Every one of those 19 people would be an awesome astronaut, and there's five other weeks of 20 people. I don't see how I have a chance. And it's that type of attitude, if I hadn't have applied, if I had told myself that before putting in the application, I certainly couldn't be picked. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of just kind of jumping on things when you think it's right for you and your gut is saying, I would like to do this, to do it, to act. And then just stuff happens. Like I was not a fifth grade kid with space shuttles glued to my wall, Navy SEAL guys posters all over the place. Partly because they didn't have Navy SEAL posters.
Right? Be someone special.
This came online.
Yeah. But it just happened. I ended up going to the Naval Academy. I learned about the Naval Academy because we didn't have a whole lot of money to pay for college. So I knew I needed to have some sort of help with paying for it. And the Academy fit that bill. And I liked what the Academy stood for. And then once I got there, I learned about about the SEAL teams. And I saw some impressive looking dudes. And I thought, man, I wonder if I have what it takes to be like those guys.
Cool.
And then I already told you the Bill Shepard story, and now here I am talking to you about all that stuff. So it just life just happened, and I jumped on stuff when I did.
I one of the things, I love how you talk about open doors, and I think you also have another very unique perspective because, correct me if I'm wrong, but sir, for 2 years – you were responsible for recruiting new astronauts and bringing them into the fold and monitoring and being in charge of that. Can you, after that experience, and we asked when Andy Stump was on, you know, he was a Buds instructor, and we're like, you know, who is the guy that makes it or whatever? Can you describe some of the character traits that y'all at NASA look for that you in particular find admirable or impressive to where these people are going to make great teammates and great astronauts?
Good question.
Yeah, really, I've thought a lot about this because when we're getting thousands of applications for just 10 or 12 or 15 positions, there's plenty of people with impressive resumes, but how do you pick the ones that would be a good teammate? And it's really, really hard to do. But one of the things that jumps right out in an interview as we conduct them and then watch them in different field exercises is just a simple question. Would I want to go camping with that person over a long weekend? And if the answer to that is, I'm not so sure, then it's done. Game over. But if I tell myself, and man, that person's pretty cool, I'd like to know that person more, and I really like how they conduct themselves, I really like what they stand for, and it would be fun and an honor to spend 3 days camping with them, they make it to the pile of let's keep talking to this person instantly.
There's
other factors that go into it, but for me personally, it all boils down to that. Would I want to camp with them?
That is a great question. That's awesome.
Now you're stuck in that environment so small. I mean, but I asked him the question too. Is it the most brilliant people, and they're like, no, it's not. It's got to be it's a cohesive team. You got to be able to live together, survive together, and get along in those cramped environments. And the best part about it is, mm-hmm. is most people think age is a countdown. It's actually a count up, but I mean, and you can switch at any time you want. And that's what he does. I mean, and the doors that open as you go through life. It's funny when you're young, you're like, oh man, if I got a chance to do that, the stress and everything that came along with that. Well, yeah, at that age it is. But after a while, after you get in those different situations, it teaches you that level of confidence. So when it is time for you to walk down in through that door, down that rabbit hole, you're ready. The stress level is not that hard. It's more of an excitement. And man, hearing you say that when you turned in your packet, you're like, man, all them guys are better than me. I think that too.
Yeah.
And that's too. What you need to remember, man, is everybody thinks that. So if everybody's yep. thinking that, man, why not? Why don't I put my package in? Why don't I show up and try? And, you know, it's true. Most everybody is better than me anyways, but it's
at least that
it's running. At least showed up, right? I had more fun showing up and getting my ass kicked than
me
I did.
Too. Amen. I love
that
it.
That was the best part.
Well, sir, before we, you know, kind of wrap this up, we always like to ask our guests, what are the things that you try and let's say, because I know you talked about one of my favorite answers you gave in the Mad Minute was to fly forward in time to see how your kids were. So what do you share with your kids to teach them the never quit mindset? What traits do they need to have every day when they wake up in order to feel fulfilled, to find greater purpose in their life like you have?
Oh, man. You know what's so funny? That it's way easier to do in your professional life than to your kids to instill them with that. But at the very simple, basic level, when it's age appropriate, right? Like, so yep. when they're really little, it's simple stuff like, no, fix the toy yourself. You got it. You know how it works. You don't have to hand it to me. You can make it work. And as they go get older, it's more, so-and-so doesn't like me or whatever, you know, that kind of mess that happens in middle school and high school. And so I think I don't have one specific answer, just trying little times. Somebody told me once or gave this analogy to me once, that you drive an aircraft carrier by little 3-degree corrections. If you got to make a 30-degree correction, you did something wrong like 5 miles
an hour. Yeah. That's a good analogy.
That's how I think for kids, raising kids. You know, if you're making the hard left turn in high school, man, you could have made a small correction back years ago.
Absolutely.
Is the same thing true for the person that's sitting home listening to this podcast, or they're sitting in their car, they just left work, you know, they're experiencing the divorce, they're not happy with their job. What is the first little kind of correction they can make to start, you know, changing the rudder to get that never quit mindset rolling? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's just simple. Like the decision is yours. You know, you can wake up today and do, what are you going to do today to make it better? Or what are you going to do today to endure more instead of having the other side of, oh my God, this is horrible and oh, I just can't make it. Think of it more on the positive side of what action am I going to do right now to make my life better? Kind of like, what action are my hands going to do to get Luca safely inside, just on a smaller scale down to what, how you can affect your individual day.
Awesome.
And simple corrections. You're right. That's the first thing we learn when we're an SDV pilot, right? I remember the first time I sunk that boat down and we were driving and navigator was like, hey man, we're going a little deep. I was like, oh God, I jerked that thing back but nothing happened real fast. And all of a sudden, man, we just skyrocketed up. Then you jam it down so you can go back down and it's a nightmare. I mean, you literally have to stop, right? If you make some large corrections and get slapped in the face once or twice, stop, right? And just start the motor up and make those simple corrections. And that was the one thing I learned coming out of there too, man, is it's no matter how bad the situation is, you got a little bit of time take control, take a deep breath, let it unfold, and then make those simple corrections and take the hit. I mean, the body and is designed to do that anyways. And as you're going through that, it's those simple little corrections that will bring you back to center. And from center, you can go anywhere.
And, exactly.
That was a hard lesson learned, but it was definitely a good one, man.
I love it.
Well, amen, Marcus. Well, amen. Yeah.
Well, you know, sir, thank you so much. Where can people pay attention to your career path, to what's going on with the space program and NASA? Where do people follow you and follow the program?
Of course, you can go to the NASA webpage. I'm not a huge social media guy, but I a torture chamber, I recently opened up an Instagram account. So Astro_Seal is where I've been posting a few things. But I'm not super active on it, but I will be as I'm leading up to this next mission. So you can follow me personally there. But in general, the NASA webpage is a wealth of information, and you can follow all the missions there, and mine will be there on there and not in for about next year.
One quick last question, because I got to throw this out there. I know Kim's the new guy. Have you hazed him yet, like in a platoon?
Kind of, that behavior doesn't get the warm, fuzzy welcome that it does in the SEAL in the platoon hut that it does here. So he'll get his with all the astronaut candidate stuff that's coming at him the next 2 years.
Awesome, sir.
Well, it's amazing what we do to each other. I was talking to somebody, this totally off thing, but about someone was giving me the business about waterboard. I was like, you know, everything that we do to the terrorists during interrogations, team guys do for fun at the bar. I've been waterboarded I don't know how many times by my buddies just to do it, see if you can take it to long. I mean, some of our stuff is amazing. The guys are fired up about give it to me, and then these people are freaking out about it. I'm like, wait a minute, we do that for fuss price.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, sir, awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. God bless you and all your teammates and what you guys are doing at NASA. It's a true inspiration to all of us and all of our listeners. So thank you for being
you
on.
You guys are as well. Thanks. Great to be with you today. Hooyah.
Hooyah. All right. God bless.
All right. God bless. Take care.
Cool. Thank you.
See ya.
All right, bro, I don't care what I've done in my life. When I look at the guy, the way he talks, what he talks about, where he's been. Bro, he just gave a never quit story about being in space.
But he delivered it. Like, I mean, I felt like we're in a platoon space, but he tells good frog, man.
Totally.
He's got the whole wit and human cut up, man. Oh. I'm like, he's an astronaut. You can sit there and listen to those stories because no one else has them.
At all.
Oh, dang, man.
I mean, he literally.
I had so much stuff written down, I had to get out of here. I was like,
dude, I saw your pad just mounting up and mounting up question after
drive down there.
Wizard, one of the things that I, you know, when I heard the dude talk and that question that you asked about exceptionalism, man, you know, it's interesting because people struggle with it, right? People they have difficulty with recognizing how exceptional they are. So I found it interesting the way he answered it. I honestly don't believe, I mean, maybe in, you know, with his wife in their bedroom at night, hey, sweetie, I'm awesome, aren't I? Oh, yeah, baby, you're awesome. But I don't think that dude probably knows how awesome he is.
Well, best part about it is it kind of lets you know, I mean, that's the pinnacle right there. You're sending somebody. Everything else is earthly. Navy SEAL, MIT, that's one of them guys that when you sit there and you listen to a story, you look at him here like, man, that's the coolest stuff. I wish I could do that, but I'm nowhere near an MIT grad, and I can't do this. But the thing about what he explained was, is, man, it takes a team to get your ass up into space, man. And it's not just the smart clicks that get in there and the brilliant minds. You can't have that, man. You go crazy. I mean, you wouldn't get anything done.
Ever.
You need the knuckle dragger down there that has the quick wit and can bring the team together, even if you can't roll them gimbals like they do in space for 9 days. But
because the world needs ditch diggers too. Because the world needs podcasters too.
Yeah, damn it.
And it's cool, man, because he's kind of walked through that gamut in all of those fields.
Bro.
Sports and then the teams and then.
What'd you think, Wizard?
Well, on that specific question, I think I kind of blindsided him, honestly. And when you said that, it made me think he's probably not the best person to answer that question about himself because he doesn't look at himself that way. But I still think we got a very valuable answer out of him.
Absolutely.
Him talking about the importance of recognizing and taking advantage of the opportunities that come to you. And
that's my favorite part.
Then
right there, dude.
How all of these small, taking advantage of all these small opportunities, small changes, the small decisions in life, they have an inertia in themselves.
Oh.
And over time, that small correction over distance is a massive change.
There's no end game.
Genius right there.
Yeah, there is no end game. There's no, those title, a lot of people get into, they work their ass off, they get that title and stops. Like, oh, I got my title and this is what I'm at, and whatever comes along with that title. But,
and they'll live in that title for 10 years.
Right. That's not the game, man. One leads to the other, right? One will give you the platform. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier. When you go down, it doesn't, sometimes when you're going to go down this path, hell yeah, it's going to be hard in the beginning because you ain't ready for it. You're not technically supposed to be up in this part yet, man. You skip
pain.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the test. That's the life part of it. And man, it's just one. There is no end game. There is no title that defines you, right? You define the titles
by walking through the doors.
Walking through it, man.
By walking through the doors
through it, they're gonna experience it differently, man. Everything's gonna change. That's the great part about it. It's unique to the individual, man. But when you're the guys that keep going and going and going and excel in those things that hell, only a handful of people can do, still have the humility to deliver it like he did, man, is epic.
It is epic.
I think that's a great observation that you just pulled out there, that some people will strive to achieve whatever this goal is that's way up there, and they will work to get there. And once they get there, they sort of become content in that, and they stop perhaps taking advantages of everything that they can continue on to do.
As a platform.
To the next platform.
Right. Yep. They become the definition of what that is. Like people, when they describe that, then you try to assimilate into every aspect of that, when in reality, if you shot up into that and you've become that, imagine what else you could do.
Exactly. Oh, bro, look at us. We're the perfect example of that, right? Here we are. All of us have invested a truckload of time carrying a gun for a living at the highest level, right? And it's been an identity that we have, you know, really dedicated our lives to. But we recognize, hey, that is not the pinnacle of our existence. There's a greater capacity that exists within each other, within each one of us, that opens a door to a completely different emotional experience, a different physical experience.
You're supposed to change. You're supposed to change.
Thank you.
Take all those experiences you've learned through each one of those evolutions, man, and put it into something else.
Amen. Listen, I'll tell you what, man, if this is your first show, holy cow. Now, I hope, because I know I feel it. I'm looking at Marcus. I'm looking at Wizard. We feel it, how, you know, remarkable this individual, but also how down to earth he is. So hopefully you, as a new listener to the show, you heard the core information that he was disseminating in a very manageable, very tangible way, not reading you the gimbal qualifying quantifications or any of that nonsense, mambo jambo metric shit. He's telling you the truth of what it means to enhance your life incrementally. Little bits at a time. Make the changes. Go through the doors that feel right for you. Man, I love that. You know, he talked consistently about that intuition. So if you're listening, you found us, your gut said, man, this could be a great show to check out this podcast. Man, then you are spot on. And we appreciate you being here. And if you're coming back, holy smokes, did you get a doozy on that one, man. If you don't take something away from astronaut Navy SEAL Chris Cassidy, then I don't know what you're doing. Maybe you're not paying attention to what just went down, but please, you need to pay some attention. If y'all want to know more or just listen to some more epic shows, go ahead and visit our catalog, visit our website at tnqpodcast.com. That's tnqpodcast.com. And if you really are fired up, we would love it. I mean, we would sincerely love it if you were to share your greatest never quit story on our website. We've built this incredible, incredible community of people and their never quit stories. And if they're good, we're posting all of them on the site. If they're good, we're going to read one we got here in a second. And if they're great, Marcus,
coming on.
Coming on. And our next recording sessions here coming up in about a month and a half, we're going to have one of those listeners on the show. So you could be the next one. Also, guess what? Guess what, Wizard?
What?
Tell them what we got.
We got swag.
We got swag, swag, swag. Give me that swag, swag, swag. Marcus, what do we got?
The team loadout.
We got the loadout, baby. T-shirts. All right. If you want to blast off at any function you go to, out to the movies, out with your significant other, if you want to look cool at your kid's soccer game, if you want to look cool on weekends working out in your local gym, go to tnqpodcast.com/merchandise and check out our new gear, baby. You're gonna love wearing it. We love wearing it. In fact, I sleep in mine. My girls wear it to school. That's ridiculous. But we're going to have kids stuff here soon. All right. Also, please follow. We finally got the Wizard to break down Marcus, and he's on social media now, which is pretty awesome. So just go to Instagram and search The Wizard TNQ, and he'll come up.
You have no idea where you're going to be.
Anywhere. Yeah, you're going to see the back of his head all around the world, which is awesome. You can also follow the show. We've got a show podcast page at TNQ Podcast on Instagram. Of course, you can follow me at Team Frog Logic, and you can follow Mr. Never Quit himself at Marcus Luttrell. All right. And if you want to find the show, Wizard, where can they go, buddy?
Pretty much anywhere you would expect to find a podcast, whether it's Android, iTunes, online.
And it's the simplest thing in the world to do. Just go to your little iPod, iTunes podcast app, or one of your other podcasts. All you got to do is search Team Never. We'll pop right up, hit the subscribe button, and you will have Marcus, the Wizard, and I in your head 24/7. 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We can be motivating you to develop the never quit mindset. What do you think about that, Marcus?
That's right, man. You got that one down. That was good.
Wasn't it? Did that sound
you're
like
pretty good at that, man?
Am I almost Monster Truck good? For one night and one night only, the Monster Truck Extravaganza. Wizard looks like he's gonna kill me right now.
That's the face of terror.
That would be cool if we could call a Monster Truck down, though.
Dude,
maybe let's Supercross.
Let's get the guy who built the grave digger. You want to?
Oh yeah.
Let's go call up Travis.
Bigfoot, legendary, or grave digger. One of those. Man, I was with them. Never mind.
That's a whole nother show. All right.
Rabbit hole.
Here we go. We're gonna read TMQ podcast listener from Chris. His never quit story. Are you ready, gents?
This is a good one. I like this one.
Awesome, Chris. Hey guys. I have listened to many of your shows, and I often hear most people say that just getting out of bed every day is their never quit story. I personally have had many never quit moments in my life, and when I look back, I can't believe that I made it through. I am not, however, writing about my experiences, but how I was given the never quit mindset from my parents. Oh, that's cool, dude. My parents were born into religious families that believed in faith healing, which meant that they had never been to a hospital, ever. My mother was pregnant with my oldest sister when she was 19, and then continued to give birth to a total of 14 of us. I didn't make that up right there. That's 14 of us over the next 25 years, as birth control was not an option. All of us were born at home with a midwife with no medicine. My second child was born at home with a midwife, no meds. My father worked. That's me speaking, by the way.
We need to see if we can bring his mother on.
Right? Mm. My father worked maintenance jobs for a minimal income. We never went without the necessities growing up and always had food on the table. One of the best traits I learned from my parents was that when times are tough, you get up early and go to work. And my mother took care of us every day of our lives while we were at home. My family has since left the church they were raised in and the oppression it forced on its constituents. Once my youngest sibling was in school, my mother went back to school and became a medical assistant at a clinic. My father worked long hours to keep a roof over our heads and food on the table. He would then have to come home and discipline my brothers and I as we were rowdy as boys come. We grew up eating deer, turkey, and fish. My father, after five long days of work, would wake up at 0400 on Saturday to get out in the woods. No matter how long the day we spent in the woods on Saturday, no matter how many hours we had worked that week, he would come banging on our door Sunday morning to get us up for church. I can only imagine how many times they must have just wanted to give up, but didn't, and pushed on. I know my siblings and I feel the same way when we say we want to repay them for their hard work by driving on in our lives. My oldest sister is raising 3 and 4 kids, respectively. Third oldest sister is raising 2 girls and is a manager for medical records keeping company. I am the 4th oldest, and I have 15 years in the military. 5th oldest sibling is raising her young girls. 6th and 7th oldest brothers are licensed mechanical and architectural engineers from Penn State. We are! Sorry, that got out of me quick. My 8th oldest sister is a school teacher in Africa. Super cool. My 9th oldest sister is a medical doctor who graduated from Penn State and University of Pennsylvania. We are! And I worked with the UPenn football team, might I add. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent. I apologize. My 10th oldest brother just reenlisted for his second tour in the soft community. Ooh. My 11th oldest sister is a registered nurse. My 12th oldest brother is finishing up in his master's mechanical engineering at Penn State. We are! It's just rote, sorry. My 13th oldest brother is a bricklayer until he figures out what he wants to do. My 14th oldest sister and it's her first year of college at Penn State. We are!
My 14th oldest sister. My yeah, 14th me too.
Awesome.
Oldest what? Sister That's awesome, man. Is in her first year of college at Penn. That's so awesome. All right. I think I had to give you a background of my family to show just how strong of an impact seeing our parents get up every day and drive on no matter how hard life was giving it to them. Our success in life is directly contributed to our parents not giving us an option to quit. I love the message you are spreading and the guests you have on your show to prove that if you want a better life, it always comes down to driving on and hard work. Keep up the good fight and stay safe. Wow. That was a cool one, that man. Cool. Is that one of the coolest ones by far, dude?
Yeah.
Seriously, oh, dude.
That one.
Chris, thank you so much for writing that in. Better yet, thank you to your parents
for putting
out a bunch of squared away people in this world to make the place better.
Families like that's like growing up with your own crew.
Totally.
I mean, that's whatever you want to go get. You want to play game basketball? We got enough. Football, we got enough of that too, man. We can do whatever. We can do anything.
It's a full platoon, dude.
I mean, there you go, right there, man. You're a fire team, man. Yeah, whole platoon.
Whole platoon. Most families, you might have a fire team if you're lucky with 4, but they have a full platoon, baby.
My best friend growing up had 9 brothers and sisters. And
no.
That house was, and that's not 14.
That's not 14. That's crazy town.
I mean, it'd be rough. It's probably rough in the beginning growing up, the hand-me-downs, and everybody, that's when you bitch and complain. But check it out now. You just heard their resume. How proud is that mom and dad for putting that out? I mean, that's epic, right? And then the family reunions, the Christmas holidays. How much fun do they have at that?
A blast,
right?
A blast, right? Dude.
I love when people are like, oh, it's holidays, so and so's coming over. I love that. The weirdest part of my family, bring them home, man. I dig that part of it. And when you have those big families like that, I mean, it makes life worth living.
Amen. Amen. Well, I just want to thank you, Chris, for writing in. I want to thank Penn State. Oh, sorry. I want to thank, start off and be
serious.
We're
not
serious.
Sponsored by Penn State, by the way.
Nor was I,
unless
actually.
Unless they want to sponsor us.
I want to thank God. And I want to thank Christ for the role he and Christ play in my life. It's given me everything. I want to thank my 2 children. I want to thank my parents. I want to thank the endless sunshine I have in my life. I want to thank all my friends and family, all my buddies from the teams who inspire me day in and day out with the incredible stuff you're doing post-SEAL life in your lives, man. There's always something more for us to experience. I want to thank Navy SEAL astronaut Chris Cassidy, dude. I just like saying that.
Star-Lord.
Navy Star-Lord. Chris Cassidy.
You can
actually
give yourself your own call sign if you're...
That's the only place you can give your own call sign is if you're a Navy SEAL MIT graduate astronaut. So I want to thank you, Star-Lord, for doing it. You're the man.
Thank you so much.
And I want to thank our listeners, because without y'all, this would just be some, you know, it'd be the three of us in this room doing this show, man. But you all have kept coming back. You keep spreading the word. You're helping us spread the never quit message to help people in their lives. And I can't thank you enough. And you too. You guys, this really is one of the greatest experiences, the greatest things I've ever been able to do in my life. And it's because of you two. And I want to thank you guys. God bless you.
I agree.
Yeah, Star-Lord, man. Dude, you know, when you're a kid and your friends like, shoot for the stars. The stars are yours, man. You can do whatever you want.
You can do anything.
Like, he did that.
He did it.
I mean, he taken it a long way.
Dude, I tell my girls, like, hey, you guys could be astronauts if you want. They're like, huh?
That's what the parents say. Like, oh, hopefully, you know, he'll be whatever. But I'm going to tell him I wanted to be an astronaut. He's like, hey, you can be an astronaut. He did it.
He right? did it.
There's one of the saying on our ranch gate is better to shoot at a star and hit a stump than shoot at a stump and miss.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of, the guy has no kind of...
There's no limit.
Limit, man. There's no boundaries of what you can do. I mean, if you've been in space and you can spacewalk and handle all that kind of stuff, you can pretty much handle anything else, I would imagine. Probably doesn't freak out when something...
when the dishwasher breaks out.
Right? I mean, that kind of stoic faith. He did, right?
We had the technical issues, and he told like, all those guys how to handle it.
He worked them gimbals.
Gimbals.
Right. Star-Lord and the gimbals.
Star-Lord the gimbal worker.
Hey, so brother, man, thanks for leading by example and just showing us how far we can take it. That's what he did, man. All the guests we got on, he's taking it the furthest. And everybody keeps bringing us back. I can't thank you enough, man. It's really something to be able to do this and listen to these stories. It's a blessing. I don't even have words for it. Thank you. I'm out.
Ow.
Never Quit Radio.